From the KCPW Danker Studios at Library Square, this is Downtown SLC, a show that explores the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center. I'm your host, Jason Mathis. Healthy Utah has become quite a topic at the Utah legislature this year. This is a plan that has been negotiated by Governor Herbert to provide Medicaid expansion for the working poor in Utah. This would provide additional coverage for about 60,000 Utahns, and it's a little bit different than a typical Medicaid expansion. It would provide funds for Utahns to purchase health care on the open market. Joining me today will be Brooke Carlisle with the American Cancer Society. We'll be talking about the impact of Healthy Utah on the downtown community and the role that it plays in the health of Utahns more generally. All of that after this news from the BBC. Welcome back. You're listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, with the Downtown Alliance. Joining me today is Brooke Carlisle. Brooke is with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, the ASC-CAN. Is how you like to pronounce it. Is that correct?
It's a little bit easier to just use the acronym.
It's a little bit easier to use the acronym. Brooke, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
We are talking today about Healthy Utah, the proposal that the governor has negotiated with the Obama administration to really create a Utah solution for the Affordable Care Act, sometimes referred to as Obamacare. And Brooke is I know you're not a physician.
I am not a physician.
But you are an expert in sort of the implications of this. And before we get into some of the policy implications, I wanted to just talk a little bit about the role that I see Healthy Utah playing in downtown. One of the challenges that we have in downtown, one of the issues that we've addressed on this show a lot, are homeless people. And the people themselves aren't the challenge, but they're in challenging circumstances, and it has an impact on the larger downtown community. Healthy Utah would provide coverage for these people, and in particular, mental health coverage, which is really important for so many of these folks who are struggling with mental health issues and addiction issues, to really help them change their lives and get back on track. And so that's one interest that the downtown, larger downtown community has in Healthy Utah and seeing it passed. Could you talk a little bit about Healthy Utah and how many people would be covered by this plan, and why the American Cancer Society and so many other organizations have spoken out in favor of Healthy Utah?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll talk a little bit about the history. So this has been a long-going conversation in Utah.
Indeed.
Third legislative session we're having this conversation during. So in early December, the governor released the details of his Healthy Utah plan. And so if people remember, Medicaid expansion is an optional piece of the Affordable Care Act. It was not intended to be optional, but with the Supreme Court ruling, the Supreme Court said everything else in the law is fine. A Medicaid expansion cannot be mandated by the federal government. States have the choice. So Governor Herbert has been negotiating with the federal government for many, many months.
Yeah.
Result of that negotiation is his Healthy Utah plan. And what it does is it takes hundreds of millions of dollars that Utahns are paying in taxes, not optional taxes,
right,
brings that money back to the states, to the state, and allows the governor and the Department of Health to use that money to purchase private health insurance for those who are under 138% of federal poverty. Just to put that number in perspective, we're talking for a single person, that's about $16,000 a year.
Right.
So everybody under that income level would qualify some help.
Just to put it into layman terms, or not bright people terms, my terms.
Non-government terms.
Yeah, so if I understand it, there are about 53,000 Utahns who don't have health care. They fall into this gap. They make a little bit too much money, or they don't have kids, or they have some other extenuating circumstance that doesn't allow them to get health care, but they don't have enough money to actually buy health care.
Right.
So this would extend Medicaid dollars, not Medicare. I always make that mistake. Medicare is for elderly people.
Yep.
Medicaid is for children mostly impoverished people generally. It would allow the federal government to give back to Utah money we're already paying in federal taxes.
No choice but to pay those taxes.
It's already going to Washington.
Yep.
So this would allow us to get that money back into Utah and then allow these people to go out and buy private health care insurance.
Exactly. Yep. So, yeah, exactly. And I'll just to kind of expand on that, really the unintentional consequence of the Supreme Court decision was that coverage gap that you mentioned.
Right.
You know, people in certain income levels can go onto a website. They can purchase private insurance if they don't have insurance through their employer.
Right.
And they qualify for a subsidy to offset some of those costs.
Right.
If you're under a certain poverty or under a certain income threshold, you don't qualify for that relief from the government. So basically a coverage gap, you know, too rich, so to speak, for Medicaid, too poor to qualify for a subsidy.
Right.
So,
and yet these are not wealthy people generally.
No, I mean, I don't think, again, you know, we're talking about people for a single person under about $16,000 a year in income. I don't think anybody's going to tell you they're, you know, living well
right.
in that kind of money.
Well, and I think it's important to note too, you know, I think sometimes there's a perspective that people have occasionally in our state that says, well, they should just work and these people shouldn't take advantage of the system.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of these people have jobs. That's the challenge. They're working poor. They're
mm-hmm.
working hard, often working more than one job, but they don't make enough per hour to purchase healthcare coverage.
Absolutely.
And so this really is expanding coverage to people who are out there working, who are trying really hard to do good things, to change their lives, to make improvements.
Yep.
Often people that have families, so this isn't, you know, single people necessarily. These are a wide cross-section
mm-hmm.
of people. They're not old enough to get Medicaid, so they're under 65, and they're not poor enough to
right.
qualify for or they're not old enough to get Medicare currently,
right.
and they're not poor enough to get Medicaid.
Right.
So a huge gap of the working poor who don't have coverage right now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. If you look at some recent studies that were done, and the majority of these people are either working or there is a member of their family that is working.
Mm-hmm.
About 85% of households that would become newly eligible for Medicaid have at least one working adult. So I think there's absolutely a misperception that these people are, you know, sitting at home playing video games all day,
right.
not trying to better themselves, and they just want a handout.
Yeah.
Really what people need is just a step up,
just
a little bit of help. People don't stay on Medicaid for their whole lives.
Right.
They just need just a little help to get back on their feet. Most people don't want to stay on Medicaid and, you know, be not working or working a part-time job or working minimum wage for their whole life. So
right.
You're absolutely talking about hardworking families. You're talking about your neighbors. An absolute misconception.
Yeah. Well, and I want to take even a step back from that and talk about this idea that somehow if these people don't get health care coverage that we won't have to pay for their health care. We have, in many ways, universal health care in this coverage
mm-hmm.
already, in this country
we
already, but it happens in the emergency room.
It's
really expensive.
It's very expensive. I mean, if you walk to into an emergency room with a life-threatening condition, they can't turn you away.
Right.
And if the person who walks in can't pay, the hospital or physician or whatnot is writing off that care as what has become called charity care.
Right.
And so that does. That impacts. We're paying for it one way or the other. We're paying for it in the most expensive way possible.
Right. So really the policy implications of this is if you're able to give insurance coverage to people, they're able to get treatment sooner.
Right.
They're not put into a life-threatening situation. They don't have to go into an emergency room to get care. They can get care at a primary care level,
absolutely.
Which is much, much less expensive. And it's also happens to be better for them.
It is, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, obviously working for a cancer organization, cancer is generally speaking what we talk about. But just to echo what you said, it is much cheaper and much more cost effective and much better to treat someone with stage one cancer versus stage four cancer. Their outcomes are better. It's less expensive. And prevention, just like you mentioned, is a key component of that. If someone has access to a primary care physician, is talking to their doctor, knows what kind of screenings they need. If a woman knows she needs to get a mammogram at 40, that's much better than her not getting something until 50 and they found something that they could have caught 5 years ago
right.
and relatively easily treated.
Right.
So it just makes good financial sense to give people access to care
when they need it. I think of that as sort of, in some ways, a conservative ideal, that an ounce of prevention, not politically conservative, but an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, that helping people get care early in a disease, early when they're sick, not having a cold develop into pneumonia, having a lump in your breast examined early, taken care of. Those things just make so much sense.
I would agree. They absolutely make sense.
Everyone in this room seems to think that that is a good strategy. So the American Cancer Society, very supportive of Healthy Utah. Lots of other organizations are supportive as well.
Yes.
I mean, you're up on the Hill talking to the legislature now.
We are, yep.
Joined by a whole cadre of entities and organizations who think this is a good thing to do.
Absolutely. You know, like I said, we're into year three of the discussion, and I think this year, really more than in years past, it's not just health groups similar to the American Cancer Society talking about this. It is the Hospital Association, it's medical groups, it's physician groups, it's the Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce, it's large business leaders throughout Salt Lake City. So, you know, we look at things from a health perspective and think Healthy Utah makes sense for cancer patients.
Right.
But there are tons of people looking at this from a business perspective and know how much sense it makes for Salt Lake economically.
Yeah. I think an unusual organization in some respects is that the LDS Church has actually spoken out in favor of Healthy Utah, too, that they actually see this as a moral issue. They're very reticent to speak out on issues unless there's a moral prerogative or they see it as a moral issue. But they've actually been very supportive on this issue to move this forward and to provide care and to provide coverage for this group of Utahns who really desperately need it.
Yeah, and I think it's a huge step forward. I think, I mean, obviously they're a huge voice in this state. So for them to come out and support is wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, from the perspective of the American Cancer Society, of course it's a moral issue. People should have access to the care that they need when they need it. So, the more people that are supportive, the better. And the church coming out with that statement is a great step.
It's very helpful. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk a little bit more about Healthy Utah. There are a couple of other competing proposals at the legislature. We will talk about those and really try to understand the dynamics of this piece of legislation before the Utah legislature right now in the Senate. We will talk about what the prospects are for passage and what that will mean for thousands of Utahns. We'll be back after these messages. We are back. You're listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis from the Downtown Alliance. Joining me today is Brooke Carlisle with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, the ACS-CAM, talking about Healthy Utah. This is a proposal at the legislature that has been, I think, very thoughtfully and carefully negotiated by Governor Herbert and his team with the Obama administration. Really a Utah solution to Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. It's been negotiated for several years, and now it's up to the legislature to really approve this, to move forward with this plan. In essence, Brooke, maybe you can just mention again, in case people are just joining us, what this plan would do. What would Healthy Utah do?
Hopefully, very simply put, what it does is provide health insurance to every person in the state of Utah who is under 138% of the federal poverty level, as some perspective, about $16,000 for a single person, just over about $30,000 for a family of four.
Okay.
So we're talking low-income Utahns.
So this would provide health care coverage through Medicaid and Medicaid expansion. And it's different than just Medicaid. The federal government would actually give money to Utah to provide to these folks to go out and purchase health care on the open market through the health exchange, I guess.
It would, yeah. So it is a little bit different from what you would call a Medicaid expansion. It does not put people on the Medicaid rolls. It does put them into private insurance.
Right.
So it does kind of drive that private market rather than increasing the number of people on traditional Medicaid.
So from a national perspective, I think one of the things that I've heard people say is that in some ways this is actually a very valuable thing for a state that is as conservative as Utah to be able to participate in the Affordable Care Act, opting into the Affordable Care Act, but in a way that seems to speak to some people's conservative values in our state, that it's a very carefully, thoughtfully negotiated way that preserves private market forces and yet provides a level of coverage for almost 60,000 Utahns kids who are the working poor who do not currently have coverage?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely kind of hits the nail on the head. You know, Governor Herbert has had many, many, many conversations with the federal government over the course of many, many months, and really has gotten a little bit of enhanced flexibility that really should appeal to Utah and to many Utahns' conservative values. You know, people will have to pay a little bit for their insurance and will have to pay a little bit more if they go to the emergency room for something that's not truly an emergency.
Right.
There is a component, you know, that helps people who might not be working find a job. So it really does appeal to those conservative values.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I'm most interested in on this subject, as it relates to downtown, is the impact it would have on our homeless population. You know, on any given night, there could be up to 1,100 people sleeping at the road home, many of whom do not currently qualify for Medicaid. This would provide that coverage for them, and it would provide mental health care coverage. So many homeless people in our downtown really struggle with mental health issues, don't have coverage, don't have a way to get on appropriate medication or receive therapy or receive the treatment for mental illness that really has made their lives so difficult and has put them in a situation where they are homeless. So this has bigger implications. It has implications for the business community. It has implications for property owners. It has implications for downtown in terms of helping this population that largely resides in the downtown area really get the help that they need to turn their lives around. So it's one thing the Downtown Alliance is really following at the legislature this year.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, looking at the homeless population in particular, right now, to qualify, if you're a single adult and you don't have any children, dependent children under 18, you're not going to qualify for
Medicaid
in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And so you've got this group of people that, with proper medication and proper management of their mental health issues, probably could work.
Yeah.
But they can't work in their current condition, and you generally need a job to have health insurance, or this population does. So it's really a catch-22.
Yeah.
With some access to care, they could work. Right now, with no access to care, they can't work, comes first.
Which means they can't get insurance.
Right. So yeah, they're kind of stuck in this cycle of not being able to get the care that they need so that they can get a job and start to work their way out of homelessness.
So many implications. There really are a ton of implications on this particular issue. There are a couple of competing proposals at the legislature. There's a Frail Utah plan, and maybe you could just describe sort of what that would look like and the American Cancer Society's feelings about that plan.
Yes, there is what has been dubbed a Frail Utah plan, sponsored by Senator Alan Christensen, and I know he does not like that name. He would
apologies.
Like to call it apologies to the senator. It was dubbed Frail Utah, and I will say it's a pretty good explanation of what the bill does. It really only helps those that are determined to be medically frail. There is a federal definition of medically frail. The state would have a little bit of leeway in determining who's medically frail.
Mm-hmm.
It would help significantly fewer people than the Healthy Utah plan. And if you look at the cost per person, it would cost significantly more.
So this would just treat people who have fallen, who have become so sick that they are now considered medically frail.
Absolutely.
No preventive care.
No preventive care.
No. Not getting ahead of the curve with people.
And that's, from the American Cancer Society perspective, that's exactly what we don't like about the plan is there aren't those preventative services. There aren't those cancer screenings. From a wider kind of chronic illness perspective, there's, you know, no testing for something like diabetes. There's no catching heart disease early or high cholesterol early or any of that. So if you look at the incentives, the way you get care under this plan is to become sicker and sicker and sicker.
Right.
And to find a way to be medically frail.
And then you get coverage.
Yeah. So I think the incentive is there to, you know, have a substance abuse disorder, to, you know, let your mental health issues get worse, or to have some other condition that's gotten so bad that you qualify as medically frail. So to us, the, you know, the incentives just, they just don't make a lot of sense.
Right. And then I believe Representative Spendlove, which interestingly, he was one of the primary negotiators for Governor Herbert's plan when he worked for the governor's office. But now he's come up with another plan that's sort of an in-between plan between the Senator Christensen's plan and the governor's Healthy Utah plan.
It is, yep. And my understanding of what Representative Spendlove wants to do is cover individuals up to 100% of federal poverty rather than the 138 that Healthy Utah wants to cover. And I think, you know, I would commend Representative Spendlove for trying to come up with that compromise solution and for really wanting to do something rather than do nothing, which is absolutely commendable. I think the issue with what he wants to do is the federal government has been pretty rigid in saying, if you don't go up to the 138% of poverty, we're not going to pay 90% of your costs.
Right.
So his bill, you know, based on what we know, the state would be on the hook for 30% of that, of those costs.
So it actually costs the state more and cover fewer people.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and that's, you know, that's the line in the sand the federal government's chosen to draw.
Right.
So it's, you know, we got to work within those parameters. And so Healthy Utah brings more money back to the state and just makes more financial sense.
And covers a lot more people.
Absolutely.
So at this point, it's in the Senate. Senator Shibazawa is the sponsor, a physician, actually, which
is,
I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, he's an emergency room physician, which gives him a great perspective, is that he sees those people in the ER that don't have coverage, and he sees what happens to them.
Yeah, he maybe more than many other legislators has a real understanding of this from his profession. So prospects in the Senate, I think, seem pretty good.
Pretty good.
Are pretty encouraged about the Senate.
Yep.
House may be another story, right?
I think it's safe to say the House is another story. Yeah, I think, like you mentioned, the bills in the Senate, you know, might go to a vote this week, early next week.
Mm-hmm.
That remains to be seen. But yeah, I think the support for Healthy Utah in the House is not as robust as the support in the Senate. But hopefully we will get there.
Hopefully. Well, Brooke, thanks very much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Appreciate perspective and explaining in simple terms what can be a complex issue and yet something that really will impact the lives of so many Utahns and have such a great impact on downtown.
Absolutely, yeah. It is a complicated issue, but I think once you take the time to explain it to people, they get it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being here. We appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. You can join us every Thursday at 10 a.m. where we talk about the people, places, and events helping to shape Utah's urban center.